El Recinto Universitario de Mayagüez de la Universidad de Puerto Rico presenta a la doctora Mariam Lumín Rosa en Foro Colegial, la revista informativa radial del antes, ahora y siempre colegio. Más de 100 años forjando profesionales de excelencia.
Foro Colegial, la revista informativa del Recinto Universitario de Mayagüez. Soy Mariam Lumín Rosa, directora de la oficina de prensa del colegio, y es un placer nuevamente compartir con los amigos y amigas que nos sintonizan viernes tras viernes en este espacio de educativo del acontecer del antes, ahora y siempre colegio. Más de 100 años forjando profesionales de excelencia. El doctor Wilford Smith, oceanógrafo físico y catedrático del Departamento de Ciencias Marinas del Recinto Universitario de Mayagüez, será parte del selecto grupo de científicos que participará en la expedición de verificación científica Alvin 6500 metros, una misión en la que se probará la reconocida plataforma de investigación oceanográfica a profundidades que alcanzan los 6500 metros en la fosa de Puerto Rico, también conocida como La Trinchera, y también en el Cayman Rise, ubicado en el oeste de las islas de Caimán. Sobre esta expedición que es importantísima, hablaremos hoy en Foro Colegial. Le damos la bienvenida al doctor Smith. Él se siente más cómodo hablando en inglés, así que hablaremos en español y en inglés en esta transmisión. Saludos, profesor. Bienvenido a Foro Colegial. Welcome.
Hello, good afternoon, Mariam. It's a pleasure to be here.
Gracias por estar con nosotros, profesor. Si nos puede contar un poquito más de lo que implica esta expedición. Can you tell us a little bit more about this expedition?
Yes, I'd love to. The Alvin is one of the world's first deep sea submersibles, and it's been in service since 1964. But during that time period, there have been many, many modifications and renewals, such that the Alvin that we sail on today includes no part of what was originally constructed in 1964. Everything is new. And most recently, its depth range, the depths to which it can safely go, have been extended to 6,500 meters, which is just over 21,000 feet, or just over 4 miles deep. And the purpose of the mission that I've been invited to participate in is to, for the first time, go out on the newly retrofitted Alvin and establish its capability for acquiring scientific data at these new depths. And just a slight correction, we were originally scheduled to perform dives in the Puerto Rico Trench and in the Cayman Rise, but because of delays associated with the Navy certification, et cetera, we're now only going to be diving in the Puerto Rico Trench.
Go ahead, Professor.
So I was just going to add that's sad, because all of the scientists involved wanted to see both regions, but it means that we will be diving twice as much in the Puerto Rico Trench. So instead of having just 5 dives in the Puerto Rico Trench, we'll have 10 dives in the Puerto Rico Trench. So for the island, it's a good thing.
Professor, I was going to ask you, quería preguntarle sobre qué representa ser seleccionado para este grupo, que entiendo que es un grupo pequeño de científicos. What represents for you to be selected? I know it's a small group of scientists that are gonna do these missions. Can you tell me a little bit more what represents to you?
Oh, well, it's obviously a very exciting opportunity. You may know, and some of our listeners may know, that I've been conducting research in the Puerto Rico Trench since the year 2006, but it's always been a remote investigation. That is to say, I've designed instruments that I can release at the surface, and they go down to the bottom of the trench, and they record data, and then they bring it back to the surface. So I've never actually been there myself, even though I've been working with with the data in the trench for 15 years now. This will be the first time that I actually have a chance to see firsthand what the environment looks like. And I hope that this will allow me to gain insights that will allow me to change and improve my investigations in the future.
How was the selection process? ¿Cómo fue el proceso de selección de los científicos que van a participar? How were you selected?
As with many scientific opportunities, funding opportunities, etc., there was a call for applications that was announced essentially globally. I was sent the call for applications by a number of colleagues who knew that I had experience working in the Puerto Rico Trench, and so they wanted to make sure that I saw it and that, you know, they knew it would be of interest to me. And then I applied, and so the application process was not unlike many funding opportunities where there's a global call for applications, and then you apply, and then there is some kind of selection criteria that occurs that the applicants are not included in, you know. So I don't know exactly what the selection process involved, but typically there's some sort of a panel that meets and evaluates all the different applications, and there's, you know, several stages in the evaluation process where they say, well, this person followed all the or didn't follow the instructions, and we can't include them. And then they have a smaller group, and then they continue to reduce the size of the group until they arrive at the people that they are interested in including, and then they notify those people. And not all of them will be able to participate because of the timing. When the application process came out, there wasn't a firm timeline. It was sort of an open timeline. Sometime, you know, in the fall of 2021. And fortunately, I was still able to participate. And so here we are.
Thank you, Professor. El profesor nos había explicado anteriormente en entrevista con nuestra oficina de prensa que solicitaron unos 200 científicos, y de esos, él fue uno de los seleccionados y seleccionaron 20. Así que él compara este proceso de selección con el proceso de selección de un astronauta. Doctor, I was telling our audience that you told me before that they received like 200 applications in which they selected 20. So you felt this was like, you made a comparison that it was like selecting an astronaut. Can you tell me a little bit more?
Oh, yes. Truthfully, there were probably more than 200 applicants, but there were 200 that were validated, that were considered valid. And so because it was a global application, anybody could respond. And there are people that really probably are not qualified to go on such an expedition that applied anyway. So but their applications were not included in the final group of valid applications, which was approximately 200. And so that's not unlike the process that happens with selection for the astronauts that participate in the NASA astronaut program, where there are many, many applicants, but many of them are not even considered. And then there's a much smaller group that are actually considered, probably in the range of, you know, 200 or so. And then in each year, there's probably 10 or 20 that are actually selected to become astronauts. And I don't mean to say that this is equivalent to being accepted as an astronaut, more so the fact that the mission itself, the diving to these depths in the ocean, is not unlike a space mission, in that there are the same kind of environmental considerations and extremes that we'll encounter.
Profesor, si nos podía hablar sobre cómo será la expedición, qué es lo que va a estar pasando. How is going to be the expedition? What is going to be happening for you, the people that are gonna be participated in it?
Right. That's a good question. So, initially, before we even leave the dock, we'll go through an orientation process and where we'll establish the procedures that have to be adhered to while boarding the submarine and while in the submarine and the taking of data and the operations during the dive. And then we'll leave the port and we will have established dive locations at that time. We're still working on establishing the exact locations now. There will be certain scientists that are assigned to each dive. And there'll be two scientists per dive and one pilot. So there are three people that go into the to the screen for each dive. But even the scientists that are not on the dives will be participating in the preparation for the dives and the execution of the dives while on the ship, because there is communication between the ship and the submarine, limited communication, but there is communication during the dive. And so, for instance, I've been selected to participate in the navigation team. And so I will be working with the other scientists that are on this navigation team to make sure that any uncertainties in the actual position of the Alvin while it is underwater are minimized. Then at night, there is a second device that's not unlike the devices that I've developed to work in the Puerto Rico Trench. That's called a lander. And it is a device that has no does not contain people. It's unmanned, and it is released from the surface, and it drops down to the bottom of the trench and collects specific types of data, either water samples or other types of measurements, and then it comes back to the surface. We'll be doing that at night because we can't do that operation at the same time that we're monitoring the Alvin dive. We don't want to be we don't we want to make when the Alvin, the submarine, is in the water, we want to focus on the submarine. We don't want to be distracted by anything else going on. So the Alvin only dives essentially during daylight hours, the lander, the other device, will be deploying at night. So it's going to be a long, every day will be a full day. Let me put it that way.
How long are you going to be in the expedition? ¿Cuánto tiempo estará en la expedición? Y me da la impresión de que la preparación para sumergirse pues no se puede hacer antes, sino que se va a hacer cuando se haga, entonces se sumerja el Alvin. I get the impression that the how do you prepare to do the expedition and dive in on those 6,500 meters? It's gonna be at the moment you go to the expedition.
Right. Yes. That's a good question, and one that because I've never been on the Alvin before, is a bit of an unknown. And I would say more than half of the scientists that were selected have never been on the Alvin before. Probably even my impression is more like even 2/3 of the people have never been on the Alvin. So, and I think they wanted to do this on purpose because this is a science verification expedition, and they want to really understand whether or not people that are new to the Alvin will be able to utilize the Alvin at these depths that are now increased. And so here's the scenario where previously it would take about 3 or 4 hours for data, making observations, recovering specimens. And then it would take 3 to 4 hours to come back. And so that would be a total of about 10 hours, 10 to 12 hours in the water. Now, the depth rating has been increased, but the speed at which we descend and return to the surface has not been increased. So now it's going to take 6 hours, 5 to 6 hours to descend, and 5 to 6 hours to come back to the surface, and we still want to spend 5 to 6 hours on the bottom. So now it's going to be an 18-hour mission rather than a 10 to 12-hour mission. And how we prepare for that is a good question. We will see. There's not a lot of actual, you can't go to a gym to prepare to be in a submarine, a small, tiny submarine for 18 hours a day. So that's still a big question, but I'm excited about it, and I'm hoping to find the answer myself.
¿Cuánto dura la misión? How long this mission will be?
We depart San Juan on the 21st of November, and then we return on the 1st of December. So it's roughly, we'll be at sea for 10 or so days, 10 or 11 days.
If you can describe us, maybe people can Google it, but maybe people are driving right now, listening to this program. Can you describe the Alvin, the new Alvin? ¿Puede describir un poco cómo es el Alvin? ¿Cómo, qué se espera cuando ustedes entren allí?
Sure. It's a little hard to describe what it looks like. So let me start with the part that holds the people, because it's a little simpler to understand. The part that the scientist and the pilot will be in is a sphere, un globo. Mm-hmm. And it's made from titanium. So, and it has, you know, very thick walls. And the inside of the sphere is about 2 meters in diameter, or 80 inches in diameter. So the entire inside of the sphere is a little bit more than 6 feet in diameter, or a little bit more than your arms spread out. And there are three people inside, and some equipment, some computers and other instruments, controls. And then there are five windows that we call portholes. They're not called windows in a submarine, but those allow for the scientists to make observations and to help control the sampling techniques, which are accomplished using robotic arms. So off the front of the sphere, where the windows are, the portholes, there are two robotic arms that are controlled from inside, and they look like claws. And underneath the claws is a basket. And the basket is where samples are placed by the robotic arms that are controlled from inside the sphere. Okay, so you have this sphere that has a basket and some arms sticking out the front. And then in back of the sphere is the part of the Alvin that holds the propulsion mechanisms, the propellers and the motors, and it also holds the devices or the mechanisms that provide what is called buoyancy. In the way that the main way that the Alvin descends to the bottom and returns to the surface is through buoyancy. Either negative buoyancy, which causes it to sink, or positive buoyancy, which helps it return to the surface. Once it's on bottom, it has motors that drive small propellers that allow us to move around. But we don't use the propellers to drive to the surface or to drive to the bottom. We go up and down with buoyancy, controlling buoyancy. So there is a structure that sits on the back of the sphere and actually surrounds the sphere partially. That is where all the buoyancy control mechanisms are found, and the propulsion mechanisms, the motor and the propellers. So it's kind of a strange looking object. It doesn't really look like a typical submarine. It looks sort of like a bug, I guess you would say, because it has the claws in the front and it has kind of a fat body. But the listener should win safely, possible. Google the Alvin, A-L-V-I-N, and there's many images of it located on the web and in YouTube. There's many videos available also.
Professor, about those robotic arms, is the captain in charge of the operation, or you as scientists also can operate those robotic arms?
It's a joint operation where obviously the pilot is going to be probably the most skilled and the most experienced in operating the arms, but they are designed to be easily learned how to operate, to be easily operated. And so because many times when we're trying to take the samples, the pilot needs to be moving or holding steady the Alvin, because on the seafloor or anywhere in the sea, there are currents. The water is moving. Mm-hmm. And so the pilot will need to be worried with holding the Alvin very steady while we are operating the arms. So it's a process, a joint process, and there'll be two scientists, and maybe one scientist is operating the arm, the other scientist is looking out the window directing the first scientist, and then the pilot is making sure that the Alvin is not being moved by the currents.
When was the last time that the Alvin was sent to the expedition? ¿Cuándo fue la última vez que se envió el Alvin para una expedición antes de esta, before this one?
Yeah, I think that this retrofit process has been going on since 2019. So I think it was certainly before the pandemic started. So probably it's been 2 years. It's taken 2 years for this upgrade process to be accomplished and for all the testing and certification to be finalized.
So this is the first time that it's going to be test when the Alvin get this renovations.
Well, yes and no. This would be the first time that it's used in a scientific expedition. But right now, as we speak, the Alvin is located near Bermuda, and the Navy is conducting the actual first test of the depth capability and the operation of the arms and that sort of stuff. So the Alvin is actually owned by the United States Navy. They lease it to Woods Hole Oceanographic Institution for, I think, $1 per year or something like that. And so the Navy is in charge of all the certifications. And so right now, or yesterday or tomorrow, the Alvin will be at depth with Navy personnel aboard, and they do some pretty extreme testing where they want to make sure that in the event of an emergency, all the life support systems function as they're designed to. They want to make sure all the atmospheric controls are there. You know, the breathable gases are under control, and there are even things like special masks that the occupants can wear in the event of a failure of the life support systems. And these masks allow for the scrubbing of CO2, because CO2 is the first thing that would build up inside the sphere, and they allow for the occupants to breathe without fresh oxygen for, you know, prolonged periods of time. But we don't want to talk about that.
Yes, I'm losing my breath as you talk about that. I didn't ask about that because, you know,
yeah, right.
I was scared. That's why. But you brought it. you brought it.
Yeah, sorry about that. Uh-huh. But anyway, so it's being tested right now. We're not going to be the actual guinea pigs for the very first time. But we'll be the first ones that are actually the people that are doing the testing, they're trained professionals that are, have trained all their lives to make those sort of tests. What we are going to be doing is helping the team that runs the Alvin understand if that how well a fresh batch of scientists can come on board and use the Alvin with its new capabilities.
Finally, because we're running out of time, what kind of data are you expecting to collect from this mission?
Oh, that's a great question. One of the things that I would like to test out is a sediment sampler that I'm developing for use with my equipment. And what I envision happening is that we will take the actual sediment sampling apparatus down with us in the basket. And then when we get on bottom, we will use the robotic arms to manually take sediment samples with the equipment that I would like to use autonomously. My devices are autonomous. They don't have any kind of control once they leave the surface. And so I want to see firsthand how the sediment sampler mechanism operates in the Puerto Rico trench sediment environment. And it's just something that you can't get that information without being there to actually see it. There's things that can happen that you would never imagine, but that if you see them happening, you can go, oh, I need to do this or I need to do that. So that's one of the things that I would like to do. And then I'm also going to be working with the data that the Alvin itself collects other type of data. It connects, excuse me, it collects data that gives us indications of the ocean salinity at the depth and the ocean temperature at depth. And that's the kind of data that I've been collecting since 2006. So I'm going to be interested in collecting that data and adding it to what I've already collected. And then the Alvin also collects measurements of the ocean currents, that moving water that I talked about previously. And I have made measurements of the water movements back in 2008, but I haven't been able to get any of those measurements since then. So I'm interested in seeing that data as well.
Professor, I wish you the best in this expedition. Maybe when you finish it, we can talk again here at Foro Colegial to see how was the experience.
That sounds great, Miriam. Thank you very much for the time.
Thank you very much. Muchas gracias al profesor Wilford, que estará participando en esta importante expedición. Y a ustedes, amigos, muchas gracias por su sintonía. Será hasta el próximo viernes en otra cita más con Foro Colegial. Muy buenas tardes.
Hasta aquí, Foro Colegial, el espacio del siempre dinámico acontecer del recinto universitario de Mayagüez de la Universidad de Puerto Rico, producido por la oficina de prensa del colegio. Para comentarios o información adicional, puede escribirnos a prensa@uprm.edu. Búsquenos en Facebook, Diagonal Recinto Universitario de Mayagüez, y en Twitter, Diagonal Prensa Room. Gracias por su sintonía y hasta la próxima semana.